Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Zambia's president dies in London. U.S. military personnel working in West Africa will undergo a quarantine when they return home. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Zambian President Guy Scott has been named the country's interim president following the death of President Michael Sata. Zambia's defense minister announced the news in the capital Lusaka today, less than 24 hours after Sata died in London. He was in the British capital undergoing treatment for an undisclosed illness. The defense minister said Zambia will hold a presidential election within 90 days. The rate of new Ebola infections in Liberia appears to be declining. WHO Assistant Director General Bruce Alward says it would be a trend, but that the epidemic is far from over. He says there may be as much as 25% per week reduction in cases in Liberia. Meanwhile, the AFP News Service says U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has ordered that U.S. troops returning from West Africa be quarantined for 21 days once they return home. United Nations Chief Ban Ki-moon is calling for action to prevent another famine in Somalia. He says more than 3 million people are in need of humanitarian aid. He called for stability and unity in the leadership of the nation.
I urge Somalia's leaders to overcome differences and remain united and focus on country's peace building and state building priorities. Somalia needs continuity and stability at this critical time.
Mr. Bond spoke today during a brief stop in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, part of a multi-nation tour through the Horn of Africa. This is VOA News. The Reuters news agency reports a second day of demonstrations in Burkina Faso against plans by President Blaise Compaoré to change the law so he can run for re-election. Thousands of people marched through the capital, Ouagadougou, blowing whistles and horns. The U.S. State Department says it is concerned about the proposed constitutional changes. Reuters also reports that Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan will make it official and run for a second term in February's election. The president's office says he will collect the necessary form on Thursday to run as a candidate of the ruling party. Mr. Jonathan has already been chosen by the ruling People's Democratic Party as its candidate. The Associated Press reports that football's ruling body, FIFA, is giving Nigeria one last chance to avoid being banned. FIFA is demanding that a court order nullifying Nigerian football leadership elections be rescinded. It wants Nigeria's elected leaders to be able to do their work without any hindrance. A ban would prevent the Nigerians from retaining their world title in next year's African Cup. The AFP News Service reports that Libyan Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Thani has agreed to hold talks with representatives of the militias that control most of the country if all sides make concessions. He did not say what concessions he expected to be made. The AFP reports that there has been fighting in South Sudan's city of Bentiu, an important oil hub. Aid workers and army officials said today that a pause in the nation's civil war appears to have ended there. An army spokesman said the city was under attack from the north and the south. The AFP reports that the International Criminal Court today said no to a request by former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo to attend his mother's funeral. The ICC said doing that would put the former president and the nation at risk. Kurdish fighters in northern Syria are getting reinforcements in their battle against Islamic State militants. In the town of Kobani, a group of about 50 rebels from the Free Syrian Army arrived today in Kobani after crossing into Syria from Turkey. An unmanned commercial rocket that was carrying supplies to the International Space Station exploded shortly after liftoff Tuesday. The incident happened just after sunset at the NASA launch facility at Wallops Island, Virginia. That's off the Atlantic coast. The AFP News Service says Ukraine and Russia today resumed talks in Brussels aimed at ending a cut in gas supplies. The talks are being held under the auspices of the European Union. An EU official says the goal of the talks is to gain an interim agreement that would assure supplies through the coming cold season. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yihisu Heeb, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The World Health Organization says the number of recorded Ebola cases in West Africa is nearing 14,000. The number of deaths is expected to top 5,000. But there is some encouraging news in Liberia, where the number of cases is leveling off. Health officials are poring over the data to determine why.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details coming up.
Also, Zambia's fifth president, Michael Sata, has died in London, where he had been undergoing treatment for an undisclosed illness. And a vice president of Scottish descent has been named acting president.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Zambia's fifth president, Michael Sata, has died in London, where he had been undergoing treatment for an undisclosed illness. Until new elections are held, Vice President Guy Scott will serve as acting president. The former Minister of Agriculture is white and of Scottish descent, a fact that has stirred debate about succession language in the nation's constitution. During Sata's three-year term as president, the 77-year-old president promised to wipe out corruption and hold foreign investors in check. His critics say Sata got some things done, such as improving the nation's infrastructure. His friends and colleagues praise him as a man of action. Anita Powell reports from VOA's Southern Bureau in Johannesburg.
Even Michael Sata knew he was better known for his sharp tongue than for his populist policies as the fifth president of Zambia. On his official but rarely updated Facebook page, the late president of the Southern African nation wrote that as an up-and-coming politician, my political style was described as increasingly abrasive. Hence his nickname, King Cobra. His vice president, Guy Scott, explains.
He's called King Cobra because he gets things done. He strikes. That was the original, that was the origin of his name, of his nickname, because he says, I want this done. If it's not done, he's thumping the table the next day.
But the name was also earned by his numerous sharp riposts at journalists, at rivals, and at ordinary citizens. He even took a stab in 2012 at former U.S. President George W. Bush, who he called a young man and a colonialist. Scott says that his sharp teeth hid a steely determination.
I have no trouble getting on with him. He likes growling. He likes getting making people wake up. He has quite a complicated personality. But he has the loyalty of those people who know him and work with him, love him. I mean, he has a bigger loyal following than any other politician in Zambia.
Mr. Sata was born as a colonial subject in what was then known as Northern Rhodesia, a British protectorate. He has said he worked for a time on the railway system in Britain, though few details are available. He ran for president four times. In his final successful campaign in 2011, he promised to crack down on corruption and rein in Chinese interests in the Copper Ridge Nation. But Mr. Sata also had a softer side. His official biography from his party, the Patriotic Front, describes him as a family man and a dedicated Catholic. And they say, despite his achievements as a policeman, pilot, and politician, he was a populist at heart, attending mass in the vernacular and refusing, on principle, to drink bottled water until all of his countrymen have access to clean water. That was many of his goals he did not meet. According to UNICEF, more than one-third of Zambians lack access to clean water. And an organization called Zambian Watchdog gave the president across-the-board failing grades after 18 months in power, slamming him for disregarding the Constitution and for lacking clear plans. They also acidly noted that his conduct home and abroad has been less than decent and impressive. Law Society of Zambia General Secretary Likando Kalaluka says Mr. Sata improved the nation's infrastructure, but says his failure to pass a new constitution in a timely manner will overshadow his legacy.
The road infrastructure and I think to that extent, the development
So he seems to have done well to that extent, but everything seems to have been overshadowed by the delay in releasing the constitution, the draft constitution.
Near the end of his life, Mr. Sata was plagued by reports of ill health, and he vanished from public view for nearly 3 months. His last major appearance was before the Zambian Parliament in September. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization says the number of recorded Ebola cases in West Africa is nearing 14,000. The number of deaths is expected to be more than 5,000. But there is some encouraging news in Liberia, where the number of cases appears to be leveling off. Health officials are poring over the data to determine why. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
WHO Assistant Director General Dr. Bruce Alward says most of the Ebola cases have been in Liberia, with more than 6,500, followed by Sierra Leone with over 5,200, and Guinea with nearly 2,000. He says Ebola remains a very deadly disease for those who become infected.
The mortality rate for those patients that we can follow their full course is 70%. We know that that number is the same across the three countries. We also have some preliminary information. Again, it's hard to tease it out, but it does suggest that getting people into treatment centers, there is a survival advantage. You know, that's what one would expect. Keep them obviously hydrated and getting the other minimum care and supportive therapy needed.
Health officials are studying closely what's happening in Liberia. There's apparently some good news about Ebola in a country that hasn't had any in a long time.
The actual number of newly reported cases is beginning to decline in Liberia, and the government is really driving a multi-pronged investigation, looking at multiple strands of evidence to try and understand, is this real? Is this a reporting phenomena? Or is it even a care-seeking phenomena that's changing? And so far, based on the information received today, it appears that the trend is real in Liberia, and there may indeed be a slowing of the epidemic there.
The Liberian government is expected to report further on that in the coming days.
The big concern, of course, is that that information would be attributed to the wrong factors, number one, and then misunderstood in terms of the implications for getting the job finished here and getting a slight decrease in the number of cases on a day-to-day basis versus getting this thing closed out is a completely different ballgame.
Officials are looking at the number of admissions at Ebola treatment centers in Liberia, where an increasing number of beds are empty. Another factor is the number of lab-confirmed cases of Ebola, which has plateaued, and the number of burials due to Ebola has declined.
One of the big concerns is, does that mean people are not seeking care because they aren't happy with how people are being treated in facilities or how burials were being conducted, et cetera? But again, as they've gone and dug into some of the different data informing that, it suggests that, in fact, it is real.
The WHO official says optimism must be kept in check until it's confirmed the number of cases in Liberia is dropping for all the right reasons.
Remember, Liberia's been struggling with this disease for some time now. There's been a huge effort to inform the population about the disease, to change the behaviors that put them at risk for the disease. And probably most notably, there was a real step up in the work to put in place safe burials very, very quickly. You know, it's one of those elements of the response strategy we talked about that is scalable very, very quickly.
Dr. Alward warns that controlling the number of new cases must lead to eliminating the chains of transmission by finding all those who are infected and those with whom they may have come into contact. He says there's increasing evidence that Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea can get on top of the epidemic. He says efforts continue to open 56 Ebola treatment centers across the three worst affected countries for a total of 4,700 beds. 15 of those centers are already in operation. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Joe. In Sierra Leone, President Ernest Bai Koromo has urged the public to end the traditions of touching those who are dying and of washing the bodies of the dead. Mr. Bai Karamo says the country is at war with Ebola, as 26 more cases were announced yesterday in Freetown, the capital. Over the weekend, the World Health Organization estimated just under 4,000 cases in Sierra Leone and more than 10,000 in the three countries hardest hit by the virus.
Sierra Leone also criticized the Australian government for imposing a ban on visas for anyone traveling from any of the three West African countries, Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea. Sierra Leone Information Minister Alpha Kanu called the visa ban counterproductive and draconian measure. The availability of bushmeat in the markets and restaurants of Ghana has dropped in recent months. Varieties of once popular bushmeat, recently suspected to harbor the Ebola virus, have been taken off the menu in Accra, the capital of a West African country that has not had any reports of human transmission of the virus.
In Washington, D.C., President Barack Obama defended federal policies allowing for the voluntary quarantine of health workers returning from West Africa. Several U.S. states have issued orders that returning health workers will face mandatory isolation and monitoring. A volunteer returning from a Doctors Without Borders facility in West Africa was forcibly detained in New Jersey over the weekend, even though she tested negative for the virus. She returned home to Maine, another state with mandatory quarantine policies. She has threatened to sue if the state continues to restrict her movements. Two nurses infected after caring for the Liberian who died weeks ago in a Dallas hospital have both recovered from the virus and were released from medical care. In Rome, Pope Francis praised the work of health workers who volunteered to aid those suffering from the Ebola virus disease and said he was praying for those who are infected.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, has promised a sustained response to the Ebola crisis. Power says the U.S. is committed to ending the disease's spread. Chris Stein reports from Accra, Ghana.
In a visit Wednesday to the headquarters of the U.N. Mission for Ebola Emergency Response, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, said the U.S. government is committed to reversing the rising curve of infections and deaths caused by Ebola.
I think we need to be very clear that our goal is not simply to bend the curve, it is to end the curve. And this is something, because of the commitments that have been made, because of the mobilization that is being done, that we are confident will result, because it must result, in the outstanding gaps being filled. We can see the day when those gaps are filled and when the curve is not simply bent, but is ended.
The World Health Organization says Ebola has killed nearly 5,000 people and sickened 10,000, mostly in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. UNMEER head Anthony Banbury says more supplies, money, and doctors are needed. The mission still needs to build 20 Ebola treatment centers and 300 community care centers, which Banbury says are critical to ending the disease. Power urged countries that are not involved in fighting the outbreak to help.
Whether it's something as basic as soap, or whether it's the underfunded UN appeals, whether it's the number of helicopters that can get people into the remote areas, there are huge gaps, and countries that have not stepped up at this point have to step up. They can be part of a winning enterprise.
Power said the United States recognizes the need to fight the virus in West Africa to prevent further travelers from bringing cases to the U.S.
We have a humanitarian solidarity and great empathy for people who are going through something this trying and this horrific, particularly the countries that are affected, particularly Liberia and Sierra Leone, that have made such strides and have come so far. We want to stand with the people in those countries and help them get through this. But we also recognize, in coming toward the epidemic, running into the burning building, as it were, that it is in our national security interest to do this.
Power's visit to West Africa comes on the heels of U.S. military deployment to Liberia to combat the disease. Ebola spread to the U.S. last month when a Liberian man, Thomas Duncan, traveled to Dallas. He later died from the disease after infecting two nurses who survived. Power plans to travel next to Brussels to meet with European Union officials. Chris Stein for VOA News, Accra.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yves Woodheap. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zambia's fifth president, Michael Sata, has died in London, where he had been undergoing treatment for an undisclosed illness. And the World Health Organization says the number of recorded Ebola cases in West Africa is nearing 14,000. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
A report released today calls for international intervention to stop a looming co-epidemic of diabetes and tuberculosis. The International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease and the World Diabetes Foundation released the report at the 45th World Conference on Lung Health in Barcelona, Spain. The report finds that diabetes triples the risk that a person will develop TB. The report calls the health risk a perfect storm that could reverse the progress made against TB over the last few decades. Dr. Ano Kapoor is a member of the board of directors of the World Diabetes Foundation. From the conference in Barcelona, he describes the perfect storm of diabetes and tuberculosis.
Basically, what's happening is that globally, the burden of diabetes is rising at a very fast pace. We estimate that there are about 382 million people with diabetes living globally, and that 80% of them live in the low and middle-income countries in the developing world, where tuberculosis is also a major public health problem. To give you an example, if you look at the top 10 countries with the burden of diabetes and the top 22 countries with the highest global burden of tuberculosis, you'd find quite a few matches there. And typically, these are the high populous countries like China, India, Indonesia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nigeria, Brazil, Russia. And these are countries that account for roughly about 60% of the burden of tuberculosis and roughly about 60 to 65% of the burden of diabetes. And therefore, it's a perfect storm, because if we do not recognize the comorbidity and start to act on it, we will actually undo the gains we have had in the area of tuberculosis control.
What is the correlation between tuberculosis and diabetes? Diabetes being a chronic disease and tuberculosis being an airborne infectious disease.
The relationship is due to the fact that people with diabetes have an immune compromised status. While compared to HIV, the individual risk is much less, but nonetheless, people with diabetes are very prone to infections. And this is something that you would know, that people with diabetes often get different kinds of infections. And pulmonary tuberculosis is one of those infections. The tuberculosis infection becomes manifest similarly when there is high blood sugar level. The immune system in the body is not able to contain the tuberculosis infection, and it manifests into an active disease. Given the fact that roughly about one-third of the global population is already infected with tubercle bacilli, which lies in a dormant latent phase, when the immune status is low, it kind of becomes manifest as an active disease. And therefore, people with diabetes have three times higher risk of getting active TB disease.
How can people with diabetes living in developing countries prevent themselves from getting tuberculosis when most of them don't have access to health care?
That is the million-dollar question. And basically, it is to do about resources, and it is to do about governments and policymakers becoming aware that controlling diabetes and paying attention to diabetes at the primary care level is as important as, for example, controlling the HIV epidemic. And unless we start to recognize it and start to deal with it, we might undo the gains in tuberculosis control.
You just mentioned the HIV epidemic. So what is the correlation then between tuberculosis and HIV AIDS and TB and diabetes?
They're in a way quite similar in the sense that HIV reduces the immunity of the body and therefore it results in active TB disease becoming manifest. And in the same way, but not to the same extent in an individual person, diabetes also lowers immunity and makes them vulnerable for tuberculosis. But from a public health point of view, given the fact that globally there are about 40 million odd people living with HIV/AIDS and there are about 380 million people living with diabetes, the proportion of people that might be impacted by diabetes and tuberculosis is going to be as much or even larger than that with the TB and HIV.
That was Dr. Anil Kapoor of the Board of Directors of the World Diabetes Foundation. He spoke with me from Barcelona, Spain.
The UN Secretary General and World Bank President have arrived in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, to pledge support for Somalia's transition and strengthen security across the wider Horn of Africa region. Their visit comes as Somalia has made significant military gains against the Al-Shabaab insurgency. Abdulaziz Bilo reports from Mogadishu.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the President of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim, on Wednesday made a landmark visit to the Somali capital, Mogadishu. The UN chief met with Somali political leaders, as well as UN and African Union officials at the AU base in Mogadishu amid heightened security. Mr. Ban reiterated the UN's commitment towards stabilizing Somalia.
First, we know the political governance and development challenges are immense, and we are committed to helping the country address them.
Ban Ki-moon, making his second visit to Somalia, pointed out to major improvements in the political and security sectors compared to his last visit in December 2011. He added that the nation is on the path to recovery.
We are confident that Somalia can consolidate progress, and there is much to build upon. Many of the indicators are finally pointing in the right direction.
The visit by Mr. Ban comes at a time when AU troops and the Somali government have recently seized the vast territories from the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Jim Yong Kim of the World Bank says Somalis should seize the moment and called on Somalis to embrace peace that will in turn lead to development.
Our joint visit today marks an important moment for Somalia, an opportunity for all Somalis and for the wider Horn of Africa. The opportunity is now here for Somalis to create an environment of peace for themselves and for a region that has been marked by decades of conflict.
The visit comes at a time when a rift has emerged between the country's top leaders over a mini cabinet reshuffle. Mr. Ban called on Somali leaders to focus on peace and state building.
I urge Somalia's leaders to overcome differences and remain united and focus on country's peace building and state building priorities. Somalia needs continuity and stability at this critical time.
The top UN official has visited several countries in the past 2 days as part of a Horn of Africa tour. Abdulaziz Bilo for VOA News, Mogadishu.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility, compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.